from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 5, Vidura Talks with Maitreya, Text number 6. Yatha punasve kahidam nivesya. Shete guhayam sanivirta vritti. Yogeshwaradishvara eka etad. Anupravishto bahudaya tasit. Word for translation. Yata. As much as. Puna, again, Sve, in his Ke, form of space, Virat Rupa. Idam, this Nivesha, entering into Shete, lies down. Guhayam, within the universe. Sa, He, the Personality of Godhead. Nivritta, without endeavor. Vrittihi, means of livelihood. Yoga Ishvara, the master of all mystic powers. Arishvara, proprietor of everything. Ekaha, one without a second. Etat, this. Anupravishtaha, entering afterwards. Bahuda, by innumerable. Yata, as much as. Asit, exists. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. He lies down on his own heart spread in the form of the sky, and thus placing the whole creation in that space, he expands himself into many living entities which are manifested as different species of life. He does not have He does not have to endeavor for his maintenance because he is the master of all mystic powers and the proprietor of everything. Thus he is distinct from the living entities. Purport. The questions regarding creation, maintenance and destruction which are mentioned in many parts of the Srimad Bhagavatam are in relation to different millenniums, kalpas, and therefore they are differently described by different authorities when questioned by different students. There is no difference regarding the creative principles and the Lord's control over them. Yet there are some differences in the minute details because of different kalpas. The gigantic sky is the material body of the Lord called the Virat Rupa, and all material creations are resting on the sky, or the heart of the Lord. Therefore, beginning from the sky, the first material manifestation, to the gross vision, down to the earth, everything is called Brahman. Sabang Kalavidam Brahman. There is nothing but the Lord, and He is one without a second. The living entities are the superior energies, whereas matter is the inferior energy. And the combination of these energies brings about the manifestation of this material world, which is in the heart of the Lord. Om Agyanati Manandasya Gnanjivashalakaya Chakshun Mutanyana Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manovistam Stapitamina Vitalaya Sramupakadamyam Jadati Sakarantipam Mukham karoti vachalam, pangam langaite grinyakipata maham vande shi gurundinatalinam, pancha kalpa trivischa, kripa sinuvya evacha, patitanam pavanibhyo vaishnavibhyo namo namaha. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya, Prabhu Nityananda, Shri Advaita Gadadhar, Shri Sadi Gaur Bhaktavinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama. Okay, so Hare Krishna. We're continuing with Vidura's talks with Maitreya Rishi. So we're still at the very beginning of this conversation in which Vidura is asking questions about different subject matters, not directly about Krishna's intimate pastimes, but in terms of creation, the creator, different incarnations, rulers, the proper use of human life. These are the inquiries that Vidura is putting towards Maitreya. And in this way, of course, we should understand that it's not that Vidura's questions are of an inferior nature or that he is less qualified to directly hear about Krishna. But here we understand that Vidura was still pretty much overwhelmed because the Lord had just passed away from the visible world, or he had just finished with his pastimes. So naturally, Vidura was feeling overwhelmed, so he wanted to hear about the Lord in his Purusha forms and the ways in which he manifests with full potency for the sake of creation, maintenance, and annihilation of this cosmic world. So later on in the later chapters, so in the later purports, we'll hear more about these, the way in which the Lord is all-pervasive, in much more detail, etc. And stress will be given by Srila Prabhupada, where he explains that actually all these subject matters that are being explained by Maitreya, they are considered Krishna Katha. They are none different from Krishna. So although they're not dealing with Krishna's past pleasure, past times, although it is Krishna's pastime in terms of creation and maintenance and everything in relation to that, they are also of topics of a superior nature. And Srila Prabhupada explains that this is Krishna Katha, and Krishna Katha is none different from Krishna, just as the holy name is none different. The name and the form are none different because Krishna is Satchitananda. Everything about Krishna is eternal, full of knowledge, and all blissful, including his name, his form, his qualities, and his pastimes. So these subject matters that Vidura and Maitreya are discussing, they are also considered Krishna Katha and none different from Krishna. This is why they'll be exchanging quite a lot of rasa, of the highest magnitude, of course. And this Prabhupada stresses later on as we read further. So, in this purport, we're hearing about how the Lord is the proprietor of everything. So all that is material, all that is spiritual, all that is in existence actually is owned, maintained by the Lord himself, whether it be directly or indirectly through his different energies. At the same time, the Lord explains that he always remains detached, especially in terms of his material creation. He always remains detached as if he's in a neutral position. So the example in the Bhagavad Gita, when Krishna is explaining the most confidential knowledge, in which a little bit is given in terms of how Krishna is all-pervasive in terms of his pastime in this material world, Srila Prabhupada explains that the Lord is always neutral in material activities of the created world. Although he has control over every minute detail of material activities, he's sitting as if neutral. And Prabhupada gives the example of a high court judge sitting on his bench, that by his order so many things are happening. Someone is being hung, someone is being released, someone is being put into jail, someone is awarded wealth, but the judge is always remaining neutral. So similarly, Krishna is in a neutral position. He's the creator of an entire system. He is in charge of these energies. But how the energies are interacting with the living entities and what happens henceforward, Krishna always remains neutral because he does not directly mix with the material energy. The material world is created for the living entities, of course, to get reconditioned into understanding that the eternal parts and parcels of Krishna. So being in the material world, the living entities, we take on different forms. We take on various species of life. And according to our past misdeeds, we behave a certain way, and the Lord does not interfere with our behavior. Whereas when the Lord sees that we, when the Lord sees that there is some inclination, or as the Lord is always very, very merciful, as the super soul within the heart, of course, He will orchestrate situations where we can try to get reconnected with Him and try to reestablish our relationship with Him. So yesterday I was listening to a lecture by His Holiness Devendra Swami, and he was explaining how the process of Krishna consciousness is so powerful and so inclusive that even normal persons sometimes unknowingly are performing devotional service, and Krishna recognizes and He notices, and that is what Krishna will protect within that living entity. So he was saying he was sitting on a flight, and there was two persons sitting next to him. Naturally, when you're on a flight, you get offered some water or something to eat or snacks, whatever. And so that was going on, and this lady was with her child, and they were also doing their thing. And then at some point, the lady wanted to discard the paper or the rubbish, so the lady went across and offered to do some service and clear something that Maharaj had used. And Maharaj was explaining that unknowingly she is performing some devotional service by assisting a devotee, whether it's picking something up for them or acting in such a way that they won't have to be put into a uncomfortable position or situation. So just by this little act of picking up rubbish or providing any small help, that is their devotional service that they have performed unknowingly. And Krishna, of course, retains our devotional service. He retains and protects our bhakti at any given point. So although our material body will diminish and will vanish at some point, Krishna will always protect the devotional service that we have performed. So sometimes we might, at least for myself, we might fear that, is Krishna witnessing, is Krishna seeing, I'm trying to do some service, I hope Krishna doesn't forget. But when we hear examples like this, and when we hear devotees speak that Krishna actually, and in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna himself says that he protects his devotees, not necessarily just the material sense, but also spiritually, he protects our bhakti, our creeper of devotion. He makes sure that that will always go on. So this is the majesty of the Supreme Personality, of course. He always remains transcendental to whatever dualities are in the material world. He's always in a neutral position. Although this material world is being created for the for his lost parts and parcels so that they can reform themselves and perform their natural inclination, which is to serve the Lord. So in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna also explains that the material energy is working under his direction. So when he says he has superintendence over Prakriti, so the material nature Prakriti, which is of course influenced by time, and the three modes of material nature are there. This energy is subservient to Krishna. So because of this energy, so many things are created, so many things are amalgamated, so many things over and over again come into existence. So Krishna explains, Maya Dakshina Prakriti Shriyate Satrasham Hetunanite Kunteya Jagadvi Parivartate. He explains this point that the material nature, which is one of his energies, is working under my direction, O son of Kunti, producing all moving and non-moving beings. Under its rule, this manifestation is created and annihilated again and again. So Krishna, of course, is the eternal father, and the material nature is sometimes compared to the womb. So in the womb of material nature, the father impregnates the living entities, taking on different bodies so that they can fulfill their desires and activities. Although he himself has nothing to do with this material world, the Lord is glancing over material nature in one of his Purusha forms, in one of his expansive energies. The Lord is allowing the living entities to come and fulfill their desires and try to get some rehabilitation happening so that they can be reinstated in their original transcendental form. So this material energy that goes through beginning, middle, and end, it is a part of Krishna. It is an energy of Krishna. So in the Bhagavad Gita, we understand that there are five subject matters from Kala, Karma, Ishvara, Prakriti, and Jiva. And out of all of them, Karma we understand to be temporary and the rest are eternal. So even this Prakriti, material nature, it is eternal because it is coming from Krishna. It is Krishna's energies. And as the kalpas go on, as the different days of Lord Brahma are continuing, we have creation, we have partial destruction, we have creation and destruction happening again and again. And at the time of destruction, everything gets wound up into the body of Mahavishnu until the next creation, where the material energy and the living entities get impregnated back into the womb of Mother Nature to continue their pastimes or activities. So, in effect, everything rests in Krishna. Krishna is in everything, even in the material creation. But we have to understand, as the example Prabhupada gave, Krishna is like a judge. He's very neutral. Although a judge awards different sentences, he always remains neutral and is not bothered by these material reactions and activities of duality. So that is one point that is being made here. Another point that is being made in the purport is that sometimes, we might read also sometimes in the Bhagavatam, there's difference purposes. There's no difference regarding the creative principles and the Lord's control over them, yet there are some differences in the minute details because of different kalpas. So sometimes we will read the pastime of Varaha, or we'll read about the different pastimes that have been explained differently by different sages, or Arjuna or Vidura. But of course, as Prabhupada mentions here, that there are minute details that can sometimes be different. But in essence, it is all in relation to Krishna, and these pastimes are giving us the basic principle for what the creation entails, how everything is created from its subtle to its gross aspect. So some minute details might come out differently as we read throughout the Srimad Bhagavatam. But we understand, as Prabhupada mentions, due to the time factor and how some pastimes are happening in different kalpas, different millenniums, the details might differ, but the creative principles always remain the same. So, moving further from that, Prabhupada also mentions, there is nothing but the Lord, and He is one without a second. The living entities are the superior energies, whereas matter is the inferior energy. So, this is a point that we all like to accept in all practicality. But sometimes being in the material world, due to identifying so much with matter and the false ego, the basis for that, of course, being the mode of ignorance, we become godless. And later in the, I think it's later in the canto, later in the purport, it starts explaining into more detail about the Lord's plenary expansions and how the time factor is working, Mahatattva. It starts explaining how the chief function of false ego is it creates godlessness. So because we are identifying with that which is temporary, that which is material and always changing over time, we do not accept the best means of liberating ourselves out of the clutches of material nature. We become engrossed in the modes of passion and ignorance, so it is difficult for a living, for a conditioned soul to accept authority or to accept the supremacy of one supreme being. So that is why being in the modes of passion and ignorance are not conducive to spiritual life, because they do not allow us to step out of the false ego concept. We always stay bound, attached to the body and expansions of the body and different permutations of the body. So this, when we're engrossed in our false ego and different expansions of our false ego, naturally we become attracted to a godless way of behaving. Being atheistic or being a mental speculator, not accepting any type of authority, these are all results of being afflicted by the false ego, which is predominantly the mode of ignorance. So the best means of liberation, of course, from the clutches of false ego is to give up the habit of philosophical speculation, speculating about what life is, what life is not, speculating about ourselves, our origin. This is a subject matter that people like to speculate on in modern day conversations. Everyone is just speculating about what they think we are, where we came from. So the best means of liberating ourselves, getting away from this godlessness, getting away from the false ego concept, is to stay clear of philosophical speculation regarding the absolute truth, and trying to understand through authorized texts, through authorized books, or insanely persons who can explain these subject matters to us, by attaching ourselves to those type of persons or topics, then our mental speculation or our philosophical speculation will come to an end, and we can gradually move ourselves away from the lower modes of mature nature and elevate our consciousness by studying literature pertaining to the absolute person, pertaining to the supreme personality of Godhead Krishna. So this section where Vidura is speaking with Maitreya, it gives an indication that, yes, we have to understand how to get away from this mode of ignorance, mode of passion, and mode of goodness as well, which is binding one into the material world, and try to manifest our being, our consciousness, into a mode of pure goodness. So this mode of pure goodness is when we engage our senses, our body, fully in trying to understand in the spiritual energy, which entails us to hear and chant about the glories of the Lord and serve in that capacity. So it makes it easy for us to understand the supremacy of the Lord, even from a very, very early point of practicing devotional service. We get to understand our superior nature, being a spiritual spark, a part and parcel of Krishna. Whereas our inferior nature identifies ourselves with the material elements of which our gross body is composed of and our subtle body is composed of. So if we keep identifying with our inferior self, the inferior energy, matter, will become dominated by our false ego and the mode of ignorance. And it is difficult to make spiritual advancement if one is stuck on the false ego concept. So the way to elevate ourselves from these lower natures is to try to act and behave in the superior energy, in the superior nature. So attaching ourselves to the supreme personality of God through His name, form, pastimes, characters, and attributes, then our consciousness becomes cleansed. Then we understand who the controller of both energies are. We understand the controller of both matter and spirit is Krishna. We understand that our nature is spiritual by nature, and we act as a servant of the controller of these two energies. So it is explained that later on, as we read this conversation, how Krishna existed even before anything existed, before the Purusha incarnations, before the Mahatattva was there, all these elements in their gross or subtle form. Krishna himself was already existing because he is the cause of everything. He's the cause of matter. He's the cause of spirit, and everything is resting in him. So when we understand the control of both these two energies, how by his expansive energies, whether it's the Purusha incarnations or the Leela incarnations or the Guna avatars, we understand that he's giving certain living entities the potency to carry out his orders for the basic function of the material world, so that the living entities or conditioned souls who have been against the transcendental service of the Lord since time immemorial can be given an opportunity to have a human form of life and to make some advancements towards understanding the absolute truth and our relationship with the absolute truth. So this is a very interesting point. So let's see if there's anything I have missed. Any comments or questions? I'll stop there. Yes, Rabbi. The world is in the heart of the Lord, right? Let's see. Yeah, I remember reading it, and I remember asking myself what that means. Why is the material world in the heart of the Lord? I don't really want to speculate what that could mean. I have seen something. Yes, interesting. I remember hearing that as well in a few lectures. So there's just something I saw in the Bhagavad Gita, because this has been mentioned again by Krishna in the 11th chapter. There's the same word that was used, and Prabhupada translated it the same way, but he gave a purport to it. I was hoping to find it in this purport in the 11th chapter of the Gita. Sorry, okay, I can't find it. But my only speculation why, because it explains here that he lies down on his own heart, spread in the form of the sky, and thus placing the whole creation in that space, he expands himself into many living entities. The only explanation, sorry, was there something I was going to say?
Yes. Setting place of all the emotions and the energy.
Mm-hmm.
And since it's mentioned here that the spiritual energy and the material energy are energy to the Lord, so in that sense, they are kind of in the heart of the Lord, in that sense.
Yeah.
That's what I
was. I was also thinking, because the material world in the previous purport, it explained how the material world is being created for living entities to reside so that they can try to reawaken their dormant love for Krishna. So in different places, Krishna explains that, you know, all the living entities are his parts and parcels and they're always in his heart. So this material sky is being explained as Brahman, material sky, or the heart of the Lord. So everything is resting within that Brahman, everything is resting within the material sky, and Prabhupada here uses it to explain that it is the heart of the Lord. So that was my understanding when I read it last night. Yeah, because the living entities were all resting in Krishna. Everything is coming from Krishna. Any comment regarding that?
How can we in policy with what people about the strongest mark? How can we keep trying to deal with it?
How can we keep trying to do what? How can we get rid of the false ego? Stay in the association of devotees and become a servant. That's the quickest way of trying to get rid of the false ego. The false ego basically translates to any other identification towards my body. Because the false ego is basically identifying with some feature of our body, whether it's our color of skin, whether it's our gender, our occupation, the place of our birth. That's a false concept of what the self actually is, because the self has nothing to do with the body. So the more we perform actions or activities that have to do with the real self, the more the false ideas or the false identifications of who we think we are will disappear. So when we've been doing this since time immemorial, we've been identifying with the false ego so much, it's become like second nature. You know, whatever I see, that is what I am. Whatever I think, that's what I am. However I speak, that is me. But that's just a false identification. So when we engage in Krishna consciousness, you know, we refer to each other as Prabhu, or we refer to each other as Mataji. Basically, we're trying to reestablish in our consciousness that I am a servant. I'm always a servant of someone. I'm a servant of the temple commander, the temple president, the ashram leader, Srila Prabhupada, the ISKCON world. So whatever we're doing, we're servants. Even in the material sphere, whether you're walking your dog, you're serving your dog because you have to poop a scoop. You have to pick up the poop. You have to wash it, you have to bathe it, you have to take it to doggy daycare, you have to do so many things. So that element of servitude is always there. But if, and only when it's done in the right way, according to our superior nature, then the false concept actually will get annihilated. In the second canto, when we were studying it, there were a few purports where Srila Prabhupada was explaining a few things about mystic yoga. And then Prabhupada was explaining how the process of devotional service, it is the only process that will annihilate or get rid of the false ego for good. So some processes, the might have a system of pranayama or kundalini yoga or whatever, but they do not establish this point of service. It's always about the individual and doing things for oneself, but the service towards the Supreme Person is not established. And unless we serve, we'll have a subtle understanding of thinking that we're the master. But when you have someone to serve, you're subservient. We accept that there's someone, greater than you, that there's someone worthy of praise or worship. Then the false concept of thinking, I am this, I am that, gets annihilated. So as we hear, chant, as we perform different types of services in the association of devotees, this false ego, thinking I am this, I am that, slowly disappears. But because of the level of attachment we might have, we won't want to let go of that false ego. Although there's ample opportunity to let go of the false ego. So sometimes Kadamba Kanana Swami gives this example of this man hugging a tree. Right? He's being asked to let go and he's like, uh-uh. Just let go, I'll save you. Can you show me how you're going to save me first before I let go? So Krishna is explaining that by the process of Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam, which Prahlad Maharaj explains nicely in the 7th canto, by performing these processes, then one gradually becomes purified and gets reinstated in their original position as a servant of the Supreme Lord. But sometimes we're still hanging on to being a servant of our body and our senses, in our extended body and senses, community, country, nation, etc. Because we're so attached to that, we don't want to let go. But we should be willing to let go of our false ideas of what we think we are. So just by sticking to a simple program of hearing and chanting and performing devotional service, seriously, with rapt attention, then the false ego ideas will vanish. And that's the first verse of Shikshasakam, that Kshetra Dharpana Marjanam, that Lord Chaitanya is explaining how the process of hearing and chanting cleanses the heart of all sorts of misgivings, so that one will be able to see themselves on that mirror as a superior energy, part and parcel of Krishna, meant to serve the whole. So by this process of Kshetra Dharpana Marjanam, by Nam Rupa Guna Lila, that's the gradual elevation. When we chant nicely over time, we get to realize different aspects of Krishna. We get purified because we're always in contact with Krishna, who is none different from His name. So the trick is to always keep to devotional service in the association of devotees. And if and when our false ego flares up, devotees are there to kindly remind us that maybe that's not the proper way to act. So devotees, gurus, sadhu, and shastra are there to help us get over these obstacles. Okay, yeah, it's 8:30. Thank you very much, Pantraj Shimad Bhagavatam Ki.
Sure.